Greetings, it's Bikescape, episode 55, Christmas evening, December 25th, 2006.
Why don't we do it in the road?
Well, hello, everybody. How are you doing, everybody? This is John, your host for Bikescape. After a long timeout from audio blogging, I guess I kind of needed it. Anyway, here we are. Here I am. I've got a bunch of things that I've been collecting over the past month and a half or so. Among them, a big conversation I had with a lot of people out in Zeitgeist, the bar in the Mission, where here in San Francisco, where a lot of conspiring about critical mass often happens. The ride often ends there. And we talked about the Halloween ride. This discussion was back in November already. And it was a great ride. It was a really huge, huge ride. Halloween is always a big ride in San Francisco. And it was interesting in that there were a lot of new people that had never been on the mass before. And while the ride was pretty good overall, there were some problems in the back of the ride where I was, and a lot of people had some comments after the ride, and it went back and forth in emails, and we decided to have a group discussion to figure out why on these huge rides there are sometimes some very ugly incidents that seem to go counter to a lot of what those of us who have been riding on the ride for a long time have been working towards. So, without too much talk on from my part, let's go straight to the conversation.
Okay, so we got Hugh, we got Steven, we got Adam, we got Joel, and me, John. We're all sitting around. We're at Zeitgeist in the outside. It's early November, and it's one of the last really warm nights. We're all sitting around in almost short sleeves, drinking cold beer, and nobody's shivering. So, what'd you guys think about the ride last week, the Halloween ride?
I loved it. I really loved it. I didn't see a lot of the crazy stuff that happened because I actually decided to be in a celebratory state of mind and focus on the celebration aspects of the ride. But I'm aware that there were a lot of other things going on, but I was celebrating. It was great to see a lot of new people. People who've never been on a critical mass before. I think there were a lot more than usual.
There were a ton of those, weren't there?
A lot of costumes.
Yeah, for the first half of the ride, and then the people in the costumes kind of disappeared.
Oh, really?
I noticed that. Yeah. I had my kids, so I was into my kids. Well,
the costumes have a tendency to get caught up in the gears.
Yeah. Costumed riders are always going slow, and the front of the ride wasn't going slow. So, I mean, I was with costumed people, and we ended up saying,
there were multiple critical mass rides. It broke up into multiple different rides at different points, and each one was huge, as far as I can tell. Each one was much larger than a normal critical mass.
About 4,000 at the beginning, and when I was with the group that arrived at the Golden Gate Bridge about 3 1/4 hours later, there were only 400 people or so, three to 400 people, half of whom actually went on the bridge.
Did you count?
I counted in the way I have lately, which is I counted by hundreds rather than where I used to count by twos.
Yeah, you're kind of famous for standing up on a trash can and counting one by one.
I'm the guy who counts.
Yeah. Two by two, just like Noah's Ark.
So what else was... it was the first night that it was dark. And there were like twice as many people, three times as many people as there normally are.
Yeah. And it was the first thing I noticed was that it was really spreading out from the plaza, right? So you got there, and the meeting place was the foot of Market, literally, not the plaza, because there were so many people, and also people don't make a big effort to crowd into the plaza. Why bother when there's not many people already there? So there was that was the first thing I noticed was there's a lot of traffic was arbitrarily being held up on Market Street, buses that couldn't get through, big backed up line of 6 or 7 buses.
I have to say I didn't really like the first hour or so. I had the little kid on the trailer bike, and I felt like I had 1 foot on the ground most of the time, and I was getting sore just from like pushing with 1 foot. It was so slow.
I heard that complaint so many times. Yeah, from the crowds, you were saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard that complaint so many times in Budapest when there were 32,000 people in that ride. It was hilarious.
Were you on that ride?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It was 6 months ago, and it was really amazing how slow we had to go. It was dense, and we went really slowly, and actually there's this weird balance. You have to not go too fast or you lose critical mass.
Can I just say about these bigger rides is, yeah, as I find them really positive and really fun, and I think we should be aiming towards is making bigger rides happen, maybe not every month, but a few times a year.
Especially
say the anniversary ride in September and the Halloween ride of next month should aim for these big rides. But there are always these problems with the big rides.
Maybe one of the tenets of the bigness should be like one of the associated concepts that we can try to convey if we're going to pass our thoughts along is that big rides need to split up.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say was that whether or not we do that, splitting the ride up or whatever, that we should be trying. We should be anticipating that there's a larger ride coming up for those months, and we should be acting proactively in the months beforehand, handing out flyers that are educating people about some of the issues so that we can avoid some of the problems. So we know they're going to happen. We know the ride's going to get too big. We know that drivers are going to get held up. They're going to get angry, and there's going to be increasing conflicts. And we can try to, we can act with flyers and education to try to ameliorate the problem somewhat.
Yeah. What are some of the problems? Yeah. What happens when you get a lot of people on the ride? I feel like there's people that sort of disappear into the ride, and they're able to use the ride as a cover for whatever acting I want to do.
Especially on Halloween with the costume.
Well, another aspect of this, which isn't where you were going with this question, is that it tends to get really spread out. And because the people in the front don't realize how far back the end of the ride is, and it spread out to such a point, and you wrote about this, that the ride thins out and there isn't enough bikes to really provide the support to the corkers. And that's when the corkers actually interact with the cars. And, I mean, we both saw, going up Franklin, like every intersection there was a fight going on.
Franklin's awful.
Yeah, that's about when I dropped out because I had the kids and it was getting a little hairy.
You've got a long hill. It's a hard hill. I mean, even when I'm riding alone on my road bike, I have a hard time making it up that hill at decent speed. And there are people who are going up it faster than I ever could up the front of the ride, I swear. I mean, because by the time that I passed California and Franklin, there were probably another 5 or 10 minutes of the ride behind me. No, I'm probably just two to five, actually. But there was at least a half an hour in front of me. And that's just too long, And, I mean, you can't just drop that onto a city and expect everybody to be cool with it. I mean, that's and it's not fun. It becomes much less fun for everyone. It's not an entertaining scene for somebody sitting in a car and watching it go by if there isn't really anything happening in front of it except some guy on a bike waving like one bicyclist at a time through the light.
It's an organic shift that can happen if the corkers know that corking isn't about taking space and dominating the city. It's not about King of the Hill. It's about keeping the riders safe, and if there's no riders there to keep safe, then that's a perfect time for the corkers to stop, the car traffic to go through, and the ride can split at that point in the ride. That group can go a different way.
How are you going
to
do that?
I tried to convince people to split, but the problem is there was always some riders going through, and And it was never like a good time to really let it split. I mean, it wasn't one of these things where it organically spreads out into two separate groups. It was just a whole lot of spread out action. And I think that part of the biggest part of the problem, I think, is that, you know, I mean, I taught, there was a woman riding next to me. She goes, God, the leaders are going really fast. And I said, you're the leader. And she says, and she just had no idea what I was talking about. And she didn't, you know, it hadn't occurred to her that she could take, you know, that she was the leader of her ride. And that she was up to her to choose when to go, when to stop, what to do. You know, she had to keep it the ride. I think there's a lot of people who are like that. They're like, oh, I got to keep up with whoever's up at the front because they're in charge.
She may well have been a first timer. Like, there were probably 2/3 of the people I talked to at that ride were first timers.
Yeah. Well, that is such a switch in the psychology, though, of the ride, what people perceive of what the ride is. Like, oh, well, we're going to let the cars go because we need to sort of regroup and slow down. You know, that's a total shift of what people think that the ride's about a lot of times. So, you know, you're asking for the group to have some sort of consensus already before it starts in order to even be able to organize that much to do that. And I think if they do have that state of mind, it would happen more organically, like Joel was saying. But when there's people that are just like, no, I'm going to stand in front of you, car, you know, and I got several hundred people backing me up, and that's what it's about, then... You know, like Joel was saying, the attitudes of the corkers.
Adam was saying it, though. I mean, he was saying that critical mass is what it's all about.
Yeah.
Getting mass.
Maybe yeah. I should have asked this at the beginning, but what does critical mass mean to everybody here?
You mean the words?
No, I mean, like, what is it that we're doing? What's the purpose? I mean, I know there's a different purpose for every person that's on a bike at critical mass, but I'm just curious what everybody thinks.
Well... For me, I've evolved in that because I started out thinking critical mass. The main thing about critical mass was visibility for bicyclists, and I saw the political clout that bicyclists gained as a result of having this sort of undefined bicycle celebration. But I've taken up where Chris Carlson mentioned to me that... critical mass is the way that we want the streets to be. We're living now the way we want the streets to be, and I like that image. I don't mean literally that we want the streets always to be confrontations between cars and bicyclists or even just crowds of bicyclists, but we want to take action that shows what kind of use of the streets is possible and live that way.
Pedestrians is one of the issues that I think demonstrates that is not necessarily well understood within the group, because people do not perceive pedestrians as a legitimate class of people to interact with on the roads during critical mass. There's way too much, at best, indifference to pedestrians, but a lot of times there's even kind of a certain amount of hostility to the fact that they're trying to get across the street.
To be fair, there's the other extreme, too. There are plenty of people who yell out, watch out for the pedestrians, or up for the pedestrians.
They're there.
And it's
sure.
Also a matter of context, because dealing with pedestrians in a New York mass is totally different than dealing with peds here. Mass there is a time to reclaim the space from the pedestrians that are constantly hailing cabs in the bike lanes, not looking where they're going, or being so self-righteous that they're taking over the space and making it more dangerous for bicyclists. So I think it's just a matter of context.
That's an interesting perspective. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And I don't disagree with you, but I think critical mass is not the picture of how we want things to be. Because we want transit to work. It doesn't work during mass. It's almost like a dialectic. You're swinging things in one direction to like figure out exactly how to get the right balance, and you know, taking it, pushing it further than the ideal in order to like have some sort of negotiation.
It's conceptual. It's not literally the way we want things to be in the streets. It's conceptual.
I mean, I know what you mean, but.
Yeah.
Well, ideally, we would all be riding down the streets and speaking with our friendly neighbors as we ride through the city. I think that's part of what mass is for me, that like as you're riding, you don't necessarily know the person next to you, but you still strike up a conversation. And I think the same thing could happen with pedestrians. We could just as easily make it a priority to help transit get through mass, or design mass in such a way that... design's a bad word, but to keep in mind that transit is an important part of an efficient city life, in a pleasant city life.
Yeah. So can I also say, you know, one thing about Critical Mass, that the way I've always viewed it is as a social experiment, that what we're trying to do is bring people together in a forum in which they are not controlled by with expectations as shoppers or commuters or even as bicyclists or pedestrians or whatever, just a place for people to gather and congregate and interact, and so that they can escape some of those preconceived boundaries, and we can kind of have an idea of social life as something that's fluid and that you can adjust and change. You know, this idea that you know, what one thing that happens to me when I go to Critical Mass is I do get that sense of how different our lives could be. You know, how different the streets could you know, our social life could be completely transformed. And we do it, you know, once a month. And I'm not entirely happy with what that transformation is. But I still see it. I see a transformation happening, and I think other people feel it too.
Yeah, that's what gets people excited, is the reclaiming of the commons and the and just the creation of a social space where there was just this dangerous space before.
And that's why it spreads to other cities by itself.
It's also a power shift, though. I mean, we need to acknowledge the power aspect, and that's what some people are getting drunk off of that we're having a hard time with. You know, I mean, I view it as a bike ride.
Society, that getting drunk off of power stuff.
Yeah, it happens a lot. But I think that, you know, if you kind of maybe take Critical Mass as being more casual, like, it's just a bike ride that a whole bunch of people tend to be on. Isn't that great? And this is what happens, you know, like, and sort of take out any overtly intellectual thought from it and keep it cash and fun. You know, I think that we could actually, I mean, that other stuff's going to happen anyway, like, because it's there. But if you, the official line, and I'm making those air quotes, official, were to be chill out, it's just a bike ride, we're having a good time, like, how would it, we could maybe, you know, deflate some of this, self-importance.
I think that's true. I think you have to find some way to isolate the people that are taking an aggressive stance with Critical Mass, and that's a good way to do it, is just tell them to chill out. Like, paint those people as uptight weenies who are, kind of a church lady attitude of like, you shouldn't be driving, you should be doing like we are, we're biking, and now it's your turn to be punished. You know what I mean? I think that's probably the right tack to take.
There is a lot of that out there. It seems to me like if we could slow the ride down and break it up, as you were saying, those big rides, people find shelter in the big rides to act out, as I was saying before. Maybe breaking the ride up will give people more accountability create more of a community.
What would happen if, like, because I had thought of that, like, about a big ride, like, if we did one for the anniversary, because we have a 15th anniversary coming up. We did a big ride then. We're certainly going to get,
already?
If we promote it and boost, I totally want to start.
10 months.
Hey, we got 10 months to go. And it's like, you know, we could do something. I have other ideas that I could talk about, but that's something I had thought of, was that it's going to be, if we put out a lot of flyers and a lot of stickers ahead of time, we're going to get another big ride. And that one thing you could do would be to cut it at the beginning. Like, you could have people with a tape, with like some sort of...
Or leave the plaza in more than one direction.
Yes, right.
Design. Like, you go all around the city.
He's doing a cloverleaf pattern with his fingers.
I don't know how you make something like that happen, but to somehow, from its inception, ask people to participate in breaking it into different rides and not think entirely of one giant mass.
I personally don't like the large rides. I was on the 10th anniversary one, and I only stayed for probably like 10, 15 minutes.
It got ugly that day, yeah.
Well, and I was walking all the goddamn time. I wanted to ride my bike, you know, and I'm like, who are these guys, you know? And I felt the same way in the Halloween ride. I just had to get off my bike so much and walk it, you know, and especially when you're dealing with rails and so many people. And I was like, okay, you know, other people are sort of taking my place here today. That's cool. And I'm just going to go off and be a biker somewhere else, you know. But I really was upset with the anniversary ride because I feel the general public had not been prepared. And I felt that the people, you know, I don't know what happened with breaking of communication, but there were people stuck in traffic for an hour. And that's uncool. And, you know, there I remember this one woman who was yelling that she was trying to get to her daycare to pick up her baby, you know, and I believed her. You know what I mean? Like, and you know how those are not the people.
I think I was there, and I told a bunch of riders, stop, let's get her out of our way, because she was actually trapped in the middle of the street, and people were trying to prevent her from going anywhere on this strange idea that we should just stop all motorized traffic in its place, when in fact we had
would have been better to get her out of there.
In our way, yeah. And so yeah, we did actually get her out of there.
Yeah, she was hysterical.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a situation like that, you know, God forbid somebody were actually to have a heart attack there. You know, like, are we? I mean, I think we've been pretty good about letting ambulance by and stuff like that, but just the whole situation is
Have you ever seen anything on the 10th anniversary ride? I saw saw a motorcyclist get really upset, and I was corking at that point, and this guy was flipping out and was threatening to run me over. And I saw an opening in the ride, one of those points where it was thinning out, and I let him through, and he gunned his motor and made a bicyclist spill. And it was really, I mean, it was really close. I might have damaged the guy's bike, and he certainly could have run somebody over. He was so aggro to get out of there. So I think that's totally true. You do have to, like, sometimes let people through. But then there's also this problem that some of those people, if you try to let them through, they're going to gun it.
Yeah.
And they don't get it. They're upset. They don't have a safety consciousness. They think we're all assholes. Yeah. And
the way that I've handled that sometimes is I stand in front of their vehicle, and I wave towards myself, and ask them to follow me, and I hold my hand up to stop the bicyclists.
That's good.
And I, the whole time, you have to have a loud voice and be yelling. If you're quiet about it, people are just going to keep riding.
Yeah.
So the point is that we don't hate cars, right?
The point is that we're proactive about human interaction.
Right.
Just and the people in the cars are people too.
Conversation here.
Well, they're potential masters. I mean,
yeah, that's right.
If they saw how great it was, couldn't they possibly join us next month?
God, that's what the flyers we used to pass out to passersby. We'd give it to a motorist and say, "Join us next time." That was an
the
ethic.
Flyers. I made flyers for the ride 2 months ago, for the purpose of handing out to motorists and pedestrians and bystanders and so forth. And when I gave them to people, I had to go through the whole explanation of what we used to do to every person who I handed flyers to, because it's been so many years since we've done that. Nobody knew about that. And the same with the ride 3 months ago with a route. We had to, when we were handing those out, we had to explain about what a route design is about, you know? It was funny. Like,
well,
I want to go back to something that a thought I had before that also related to this whole idea of like 15 years and the evolution of this thing that is mass, and also the evolution of individuals in their experience with mass. And I think that one thing that would be interesting to even like graphically explain as an educative tool is like all the different sentiments of how you understand mass, and like, you know, taking that group of people that are really aggro. I mean, it's obvious that they're kind of like in the beginning of this evolution of what it means to be empowered by a bicycle, and even so through the individual there's that like kind of progression. And also I think in the history of a mass in each city has its own progression. That, you know, here in San Francisco, people wouldn't think to stop and regroup. That, I think, is a symptom of, like, a highly evolved mass. Whereas if you were in a city where the mass was smaller and it was just at the beginning and people hadn't been doing it for a while, they would have this intuition of sticking together in a way that we just don't have here, because we're just so empowered. We're like, whatever. We rule, you know, in San Francisco. We're, you know, we're bicyclists. And so, I don't know. I think that would be kind of an interesting theme to explore in terms of educating people, you know, like even like a, you know, I'm thinking of even like Mona's mural, like the different like phases of Market Street, like the different phases of how mass operates and what are the issues and what are the like the pros and cons of each state of evolution.
phylogeny recapitulates phylogeny. It's, I mean, I'm thinking about people who were involved in critical mass at the very beginning and how many of them have changed exactly along the lines that you're describing. People who used to really get off on the aggro aspect of mass and the aggro aspect of being a bicyclist even before critical mass existed.
It's empowerment. I mean, it's so powerful. I mean, I think everyone's gone through that in the beginning where it's like, fuck you, you're waiting, you know, and you just, and you know, you look back on it now and it's like, oh, I was just so like young and immature and naive, and now, you know, now it's like a civilized bike ride. But that's the point of evolution that you're at. But there's, we have to acknowledge all these different levels of that, and how do we like facilitate something that like works cohesively?
Well, and the anger is legitimate. Like, I think even, especially now more than ever, it's even almost being legitimized in the mainstream press as far as that cars are killing our planet, you know? I mean, like, there's been a real paradigm shift in the mainstream media in the last year. I'd hate to, you know, attribute it all to Al Gore, but I think he does have, like, a big, big issue there. I mean, you know, it's now... I am Monica Rum. But, you know, we have... you know, we have now a lot of science backing us up. I mean, like, you know, it's like, it's almost like we have more ammo, and it feeds our anger even more, you know, just like a daily...
But is the anger to be directed at drivers, or just the system that causes them to feel like they need to drive, you know?
Well, I think, you know, we have to acknowledge people, you know, on 101, when somebody's angry, you need to acknowledge the anger first, you know, and then you, once people's anger is acknowledged, then they calm down.
Because you can then... You deal with them as a person who's the roots of their anger is, you know, accessible then. After you've acknowledged it, you can get at the roots and figure out a solution appropriate to why they're angry.
Well, and but us as a critical mass, we can acknowledge each other's anger and say, you know, you're right, but... Okay, you know, and a lot of times I think that's almost enough, like, for a lot of us, like, when we see so many people who are also there with us en masse, they're sort of saying, yeah, my anger and thoughts are being legitimized in that we have all these people here that agree with me. You know, you figure some kid in Ohio, what they're thinking, you know, like...
just... Well, there's probably one listening right now.
Yay.
Well,
there's also the possibility, I agree with what you're saying, Sam, but there's the possibility that it's sort of similar to a sports crowd after a big win rampaging in the streets, because that's a moment when all the social standards change and people can just be crazy and not be held accountable for it. And whether it has to do with alcohol or it has to do with pressures of daily life coming out in that one moment when they have the permission to do so. I mean, there's all kinds of other things that might have very, very peripherally to do with anger about the state of the world and cars and danger on the streets. But I think that that enters into it.
Well, I think people... I think what happened, you know, when you get on a bike and you ride for the first time in a city, you come from the suburbs, you're used to riding around on the cul-de-sac when you're a kid, and you come to the big city and you ride your bike, the first thing that happens is you're just dumbfounded by how crazy it is out there on the street, especially when you're new at it and you don't know how to, you don't know the rhythm of the street, and you feel this self-righteous surge that comes up. I felt it before, and I still feel it now, although I think after 20 years of it, I'm used to it, but... I think that kind of anger and danger sort of radicalizes people and brings them together for something like critical mass. But then you have to kind of get beyond that. You know, there's this point where you realize that there's all these people, you're not a Martian anymore. You know, there's all these other people that are just like you, and then you can actually, you have this community. And Stephen just left, so I feel like I have to say what he was saying, was that critical mass is about community, and it's about sort of fostering a new community and recreating the city, the community that we already have, to recreate it in a way that's more sustainable, more friendly, less hard to deal with.
But I think also logic, you know, we're also being kind of the logical end of an argument, you know, about something we're angry about. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just, you know, my man you is going to kick the ass of your soccer team. Like, we have, like, you know, we have very rational, logical people that have been looking at science for many years going, you know, it's not logical that you are given, you know, power over the roads. You know what I mean? Like, so, I mean, now that may feed their anger. And I do agree with you, the mob mentality, totally. Especially, I see it a lot with the guys. I don't know, you know, if you guys have approached this subject before. But I do see a lot of confrontational behavior. And, you know, it's obviously serving some personal purpose for them. But, you know, as you know, my personal issues and why I'm on the ride, you know, they're sort of, I'm sure they would be in agreement with me if I were to calm them down and talk to them. Mm-hmm.
Maybe,
you know,
it's similar to the ride.
I've chilled a few people out before. I've definitely done that. You know, I'm kind of good at chilling people out. You know?
How do they react?
Well, I kind of do the, dude, you're being uncool, is kind of the way, the approach. Like I was saying, you know, chill out, it's just a fucking bike ride. That's sort of my approach for a lot of that aggro stuff. But I'm a girl. I can get away with that so much.
Because yeah. I don't get, if I try to chill them out, I just get the aggression directed at me.
Yeah.
And I don't deal with that well. Then it escalates. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I can get away with almost anything. Because no guy on that ride is going to call me a crazy bitch.
Right.
You know what I mean? The driver might, but not somebody on the ride. So, you know, I feel like I have a lot of power there that I'm pushing over.
Yeah.
But I was thinking that bringing children on the ride would actually help mellow out the situation a lot.
Definitely.
I know that you brought your kiddos.
Well, we left when things got a little hairy. But with the kids, we always end up at the back of the ride where things get crazy. You know, the front of the ride was pretty festive.
Yeah.
The middle of the ride was okay, too. But towards the end, that's where the cops are.
Shame is a very important tool for controlling a society. And I think some woman or a guy, father, with their kid on the back of the bike saying, hey, you know what? I don't really appreciate this. You know, you got to chill out, you
remember
know.
Back.
But a parent usually avoids those people.
Yeah,
probably
true.
In a smart
remember
way.
Remember back in the long ago days when the police were trying to tell the ride what to do and control the ride completely, and the reaction of some riders was to declare their own separate ride. Like, don't follow the official ride, because there was a sense by the police and others, certain others, that the ride had an official route. Instead, follow my route. Well, what if we started something similar to that, which was just for the purpose of bringing out this issue by saying, we're going to separate and have our own, we're going to publicize on flyers, we are going to have our own starting point and direction, or same starting point, different direction, for a mellow ride, for a chill ride, for a community ride.
I think in Portland they call that the wussy ride.
Yeah, but I'm not saying that we should actually have the ride. I'm saying that we should raise the issue in some way, that because that was one of the first major discussions of how to deal with the police control issue, was when somebody tried to have their own ride that was outside of the police control. And I'm thinking,
but that's ceding their control. That's saying that those elements have control of the main critical mass, and we're a subspecies.
That's true.
And I don't
want
to do that. I'm not ready to cede control.
And I mean, the step before that is actually re-educating people, or teaching them for the first time, or exposing them for the first time to the fact that there can actually be roots. I mean, at this point, I'm sure there's a ton of people that have been riding for like a couple years, and they've never experienced a route, or don't even know that used to happen, or that happens in other places. So, I mean, what you're suggesting is like a reaction to a route, when like that culture doesn't really exist anymore in the mass in San Francisco.
I agree. I mean, I think we all have good ideas about how to do this, you know, because we've done it before. We already won this argument. You know what I mean? Like, this was all like we're revisiting old arguments, and I would hope that maybe tonight we could talk about things that we could do to like trigger this to happen. People making their flyers and stuff. Because I just think that that's really the main task at hand. It's just to make flyers and put these ideas out there, and then to intervene in a constructive way, and then we'll win the argument again. You know, it's not that hard.
And to be focused though outside of the ride, so that. Because it seems to me that some of the issue is that people come to the ride and they're unprepared to be messaged, one, because they have such a different idea of what's going to happen. By the time they get there and they're ready to ride, they're not ready to be educated necessarily. It's a little too late. So maybe getting the message out prior to the ride and setting some I wouldn't say expectations, but maybe, you know, encouraging people like, well, next ride, you know, be sure to bring your version of the Xerocracy with you, and making it incumbent on each person that comes to the ride to do their part to participate and educate other people, and get that message out prior to the ride, rather than trying to hit the ride and distribute 4,000 flyers with a small group of us right at the plaza.
So what do you mean? How would you do that? Like, through...
Well, the mission is a pretty concentrated piece of the constituents, I think. So I think...
So like a poster campaign within the mission, or...
And flyers and cafes and the mission, yeah.
I don't see why...
That's an interesting concept, like hitting flyers in the mission, and as far as like just, you know, with waiters and waitresses and coffee shops.
Put them on parked bikes.
Yeah, park bikes, yeah. That could
I don't
be.
See why we can't cooperate with the channels that the Bike Coalition has established. That's what used to happen. The Bike Coalition has never endorsed the rides particularly, but the people in the Bike Coalition aren't afraid of the rides either, and they may well be willing to at least tell their membership that there's a flyer available at a certain website, or that there's an effort afoot to... discuss more about how critical mass can be. Or, I mean, there's all kinds of different ways we can use resources of the most established aspect of our community of bicyclists.
I said this before, Hugh, that I agree that flyers almost get my back up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, when I'm before the ride, and I'm being handed, like, by these environmentalists, like, 10 pieces of paper to begin with. And, you know, and
hopefully
I might...
Hopefully it's recycled.
Yeah. Well, green leaf. But I get upset, even if I agree with every word on these things. And then I get particularly upset if somebody's trying to tell me what to do on critical mass. You know? I mean, like, you know, we want to go here and da-da-da, you know? And I'm like, you know, I kind of just want to see where to go. Not saying that I haven't, I mean, like, the floodlines thing, I totally, you know, I think I Xeroxed those.
Did you hear what happened with Chris at the front of the ride?
No.
During that ride, there was a big disagreement about whether they should be following a route at all, because as it happens, one of the few really concrete things that people take from the concept of critical mass, even if they are new to it, is total freedom. You don't get told what to do. Well, it turns out that when Chris pointed out to them that they could do what they wanted, they didn't have to follow his ride. That took the wind out of their sails, and they ended up following his ride kind of sulkily, even though they were saying, we don't want to be told what to do.
Remember, John, you and I were riding together in front of the ride at one point, and we were trying to inform people where to go, because it's like you and I were up at the front, and people were getting all angry, like, I want to go to the tunnel, and we're like, this, you know, like...
I'm high on the fumes in the tunnel.
You know?
I want to go through maybe three times.
And I think both John
people
and I
love the tunnel.
Had a rational statement. I said, well, we do the tunnel every week, every time.
It's becoming
a ritual.
Can we
try something different? You know, like, that was my, you know...
You're talking about the Katrina ride, I should say that.
Yeah, the Katrina ride.
Where we followed the future shoreline of San Francisco after the waters rise.
Yeah, people were upset that they were... And they're...
It was a one-year anniversary of Katrina.
It was particularly flat, so I thought that was a really nice aspect of that ride. You know, I felt that was for everyone in some senses. But, yeah, I mean, it's funny because that must have been after Chris had an argument.
You know, my feeling about that is like that is all so constructed. Like, that argument about what are we doing here? Is this something that some small group of people can just, like, make a flyer?
It was a great conversation.
I mean, that's what we should be doing. There's an argument. There's important things to be said on both sides of that argument, and I think it's great. You know, I just think we need more of it. You know, and I also agree with you on that flyer thing. I mean, I feel I have that same cynicism about flyers, and also in that I'm tired of doing them. You know, and I'm just tired of being the guy who was running around at 4:30 before the ride making copies. You know, and so I wish there was another way to circulate ideas through the ride, but I don't see that there are. It is any
podcasting.
I think internet is a good choice, and doing, you know, I think my friends, when I send them an email and it's about bikes, and I specifically send to some of my friends that do mass,
yeah,
they read it. You know, and I know that although my
I have to say my friends are already sold on this sort of concept. They're not violent people. But if we were able to basically make something viral, I hate to say that after
working at Wired. Well, you've been working at Wired for too long.
I know. We use the internet more than we do. That's one thing I feel is funny about Critical Mass is how un-internet it is. In that it does not have, there is no Critical Mass email list. You know what I mean?
Well, there is, but nobody uses it.
Right. There is one.
One out there, but nobody uses it.
Nobody uses it.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe
no, it's all about face-to-face conversations.
What would happen if we started using it? I mean,
well,
would it become...
But it's also websites versus email.
We don't even have any websites. We just lost our Talk Fast, Ride Slow. Yeah. I had some... It lapsed. Hugh forgot to renew it.
Hugh did.
But wasn't part of the original foundation of this discussion, like passing, how do you pass the torch? Because if people have been doing this for 15 years, isn't it maybe sometimes time for other people to pick up?
Yeah, there are people at this table who were on the first, the second, the third ride.
Responsibility of doing some of the flyering, doing some of the
If it was different,
like down to German, you know, train schedules, but there's a certain amount of organization that takes place that's necessary for it to be, you know, successful. And I think more like discussing how to engage people, and not so much maybe preach to them, but to get them excited about taking it on and making it. Maybe there are other people out there ready to take it on and make it something different. You know?
Which like begs the question of how do we get mass to end somewhere?
it doesn't end anymore. It just goes on till 10, 11 o'clock at night.
Those kinds of conversations, because that's the most natural venue for it.
And once
that's
we're
happened
there,
a few times.
A few
Dolores Park is a place that usually that often
public
happens.
Public park,
yeah.
Great.
Not so much recently though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it hasn't been ending, and I just is a funny thing to maybe plant that seed. And then a few hundred people end up at that location.
And what might be useful also is to maybe project We Are Traffic for people that haven't been exposed to some of the ideas in We Are Traffic.
It is pretty radical just to be traffic. Even if you're stopping at red lights every now and then because you're at the front of the ride and you need to let everybody catch up. I think that's what I think I would like to... I think what I want to impart to the younger generation is just a simple thing, you know, just keep the front of... This is my friend Mike came up with this idea. It's like, the front of the ride just has to think of what's happening at the back of the ride.
Yeah.
And if we could just get over that hurdle, we'd be great. Well, you want to take notes?
Yes.
All right. Good, at least somebody's taking notes.
Well, how do you propose to do that? I mean, podcasting is a good way.
Well, yeah. Oh, a flyer, maybe, you know,
well,
once in a while.
About, but... like, the younger generation, they're all on the internet. Has to be the internet. It has to be. Like,
we just need a critical mass friend on MySpace.
MySpace.
You know, I think there are a few of them already.
That's right. Yeah, I was saying before you arrived, I was saying how great it would be if we don't know about the other people organizing. Because there might be, in fact, that's one of the reasons that I feel comfortable taking a step back in a lot of the bike activities I used to do. I've noticed so much more flourishing. It used to be I knew everybody in the bike community in San Francisco who was doing anything other than just simply riding. Anybody who was doing artwork related to bikes or anything organizing related to bikes. Now, I can't keep track of it all. It's going, you know, blossoming into new things every week.
It is pretty amazing, all the kids these days on their bikes, on their little fixies.
Is it just a fad, though? Is it fashionable? I mean, how deep does it go?
It is really hip to go on Critical Mass these days.
Am I speaking the skepticism of what's going on in your heads? Because I know I have some friends. I mean, we try and be positive about people on bikes, but you kind of wonder sometimes, are they just into it for the fashion? Because it's really hip right now.
Well, autonomy is always fashionable. Bicyclists are autonomous, right? If you're a bicyclist, you're not dependent on the oil and the cars and the car payments and the
waiting
all
for the
of
bus
everything or... that attends being a car owner.
That's
so
why
you
it's
have
a
freedom, and I think that's always going to be the case.
And suddenly the discussion ends because that's where my recording seems to have gone south. And to tell you the truth, the conversation kind of went south after that too. It was kind of a long, rambling conversation with a lot of beer. And I think it was useful, though. And if anybody has other thoughts, please leave comments on the blog, bikescape.blogspot.com. And it's an ongoing discussion. We're always trying to iron out the kinks in critical mass, and it's a lot of autonomous people acting together, and you never know what might happen. So let's get to the events. Well, of course, there's Critical Mass coming up. Another one. This will be the Christmas Critical Mass just after Christmas, and it tends to be a lot mellower than the Halloween Critical Mass. But it's Friday, December 29th. It's nice and quiet. Maybe a couple hundred people usually show up for this one. It's the World Famous Coincidence, organized by you. So come on down and check that out at the foot of Market Street, Pee Wee Herman Plaza. It's happening in cities all over the world, 200 last count. In New York, there's one going on. There's one in Brooklyn on New York, because Manhattan is meets at Union Square on the north side, last Friday of every month. And there's one on a different Friday, I don't have it on me right now, in Brooklyn. Check timesup.org for details on that. Also, let's see. There are a few events happening here in San Francisco I want to go over. There's the Bike Kitchen, the San Francisco Bike Kitchen, very similar to the one down in L.A. We're going to probably do a podcast with them one of these days now that I'm back in the swing of these podcast things again. They are having a tune-up class Sunday, January 7th from 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Bike Kitchen, and at their new location, 1256 Mission at Lasky, between 8th and 9th Streets, Lasky Alley. Learn the basics of tuning up a bicycle, installing cables, fixing flats, overhauling your hubs, that's always a good thing to know, truing wheels, and more. In this hands-on class, students will work on their own bikes, and we will cover what is generally included in a standard shop tune-up. No previous experience expected or required. You'll need to bring your own bike to the class, and that's about all you need to do. So come on down. It doesn't say that there's any kind of charge or anything like that. It's Sundays, January 7th, 14th, 21st, and 28th, between 7 and 9 p.m., and it's limited to 8 people. Okay, what else? Scrolling around here. Freedom from Training Wheels. It's backed by popular demand. Join the SFBC board member and biking mom Jean Frazier, as well as other families with kids, in car-free Golden Gate Park for a group effort to get our kids to ride without training wheels. So you can bring a bike, helmet, maybe some snacks to share, rain cancels. You can call Jean at 751-6619 if you have any questions. Freedom from Training Wheels, Sunday, January 21st. From 10:30 to 11:30 a.m., meet in front of McLaren Lodge at Fell and Stanyan. Oh, and here's something pretty interesting. We all know Tom Radulovich. He's been on Bikescape twice now. He's giving a talk. He's from Livable Cities, or I should say Livable City. I always get the name of his organization wrong. He shares space, his organization shares space with the Bike Coalition, 995 Market Street, and they're going to be having he's going to have a good talk about green capitals, walking, cycling, and transit in London, Paris, and Madrid. This is on Monday, January 22nd, 6 to 9 p.m. At the SFBC headquarters, 995 Market at 6 Suite 1550, up on the 15th floor. Join Livable Cities, Tom Radulovich, for a slideshow on what London, Paris, and Madrid are doing to promote walking, bicycling, and public transit, urban greening as well, and public space. Part of a series of Livable Cities / SFBC events to highlight innovations from around the world. Free to Livable Cities and SFBC members, $5 to $10 for non-members, or you can become a member. You can go to www.livablecity.org for more information. So check that out. Anything else here? There's a night ride coming up. Corona Heights Circle Tour. Sunday, January 28th, 6:30 p.m. A lot of stuff happening in the winter, isn't there? Meet at the Panhandle Statue at Felon Baker. And we'll take a roundabout meander through nearby neighborhoods to reach the fabulous city view from the Randall Museum on Corona Heights. So they want you to wear blinkies and tote some treats and add to our famous snack spread. Rain cancels, and you can write to Nancy at nancybodkin.com. So there you go. And also on Sunday, February 18th, the Amgen Tour of California prologue will be happening. The Amgen Tour of California brings the drama and excitement of professional cycling bicycle stage races, I should say, to San Francisco. The world's top professional teams kick off their 8-day, 700-mile race through California redwoods, wine country, and the Pacific Coast in our little city by the sea. So the tour raises funds for cancer care and treatment. So Sunday, February 18th, it's all more information is going to be announced. I understand there will not be a time trial in San Francisco as there has been, there was last year. So I'm not quite sure how it's going to work out. Last year they began the race with a time trial here in San Francisco, and we'll see what happens. I'll keep you apprised. So let's see, in New York, they're going to be having, their usual Central Park Moonlight Ride, Friday, January 5th at 10 p.m. You meet at Columbus Circle at the southwest corner of Central Park at the intersection of Broadway, Central Park, South 59th, and West Central Park West. And they have a nice little auto-free ride through Central Park in the evening. Another big event in New York is going to be the 9th annual New Year's Eve Party Ride. And, of course, that's Sunday, December 31st at 10:30 p.m. You meet at Washington Square Park under the Arch. And there are alternate meetup points also, 10:50 p.m. at Madison Square Park at 23rd and Broadway, the Flatiron side, or at 11:15 at Sherman Statue in front of the Plaza Hotel at 59th and 5th Avenue. So they're giving you an alternative to getting stuck in a smoky bar or some corporate-sponsored event, and you can celebrate New Year's Eve the way you should on your bike. And the whole thing will end up at the Central Park's Belvedere Castle, where there's going to be music, dancing, and fireworks. So bring food and drink to share, they say. And there's a blurb in New York Magazine about that. So I guess that's it for Bikescape this month, or whatever the frequency is that we're coming out with these shows. I promise to try and get a few more out. There's actually quite a few in the works. I've been getting email. Pamela wrote me from Minneapolis. Hi, Pamela. She's sitting there in the Science and Engineering building, shelving books with her iPod on, listening to Bikescape, and she's already exhausted all the archives and wants a new show, and I hope this one was good enough for you. There's plenty more. There's an interview with Grant Peterson of Rivendell Bicycle Works coming up soon. As I said, I'd like to go down to the bicycle kitchen here in San Francisco and cover that. And there's just a lot of stuff happening. There's another Market Street episode coming one of these years. I want to interview the women that made the movie about Market Street a while back, the 2005 version of A Trip Down Market Street, which was made 100 years after the 1905 version that I podcasted about a year ago. So lots of stuff happening. It's winter here in San Francisco, but there's still quite a bit happening. So stay subscribed. I realize it's been a little lean lately on the podcast front, but it definitely won't stay that way. So stay subscribed. And also, if you go to the blog, you can sign up to have an email sent to you every time a new podcast comes out. So that might be handy also. And if you live here in San Francisco, you can also read selected parts of Bikescape and re-listen to some of the old shows on SF Gate, the local the San Francisco Chronicle's website. There's a version of Bikescape running there on the Gate as well now. So lots of things happening. You can write to me at Bikescape at sbcglobal.net. And you can always also go to the blog and leave comments at bikescape.blogspot.com. So keep the rubber side down and take the lane. Bye now.